Hello, and welcome to another episode of Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 409. As always, I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me are John Lindemann.
I am back from the dead, and the streak begins anew.
There you go. The second coming of the streak. We also have James Jones.
From the dead. Is that what you're calling your age now?
Mm-hmm. I've crossed over. Yep.
Just restart. Just restart it, and we'll go back. The odometer's ticked over.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, Guillaume Veillette.
Press reset, the story of John Lindemann.
Nice. Well, we have a lot of fun stuff to talk about this week, not least of which, later in the show, well, it wasn't fun a year ago when we talked about the Wii U sales from November.
Oh, it was great. We talked about it. It was awesome. It was the best. I loved that.
The most depressing episode ever.
Yeah. It was like, hey, are we going to have anything to talk about on this show a year from now, or are we just going to have to close up shop?
It was a wake, pretty much.
I think I might have blocked the event from my memory. It's like,
it's gone. Like, well, we're gonna jog your memory just a little bit and kind of reassess based on the latest NPD sales and, of course, a lot of other things that have happened over the past 12 months and what we know about what's coming up soon. So that should be interesting. I have a feeling it will be a little brighter than we were a year ago when we talked about that stuff. First up, we have new business. And John, I know you've been traveling a lot, haven't had time to play much, but you did see the new Zelda footage, and
indeed.
I would love to hear your kind of fresh thoughts on it since you just caught up with it, and then we can all kind of chip in and bat around this the new information that we have and the kind of strange presentation.
Yeah, so this was the video of Aonuma and our friend Miyamoto going through the footage and just kind of explaining some things. I just watched it, so I didn't get to hear all their banter back and forth, which was hilariously translated. It's just so stiffly done. It made me laugh. But the world looks beautiful. I mean, it looks very modern in terms of, taking comparisons to Skyrim or something like that. The world is really, really looking good. I mean, they take Link up on top of this huge vista, and he, looks over the entire world beneath him, and everything looks fairly detailed, and you can zoom in and see details far away. So it's very, very cool. It's obvious that they're really going for an immense sense of scale.
So it's funny because that shot they have at it's how they open the video of him looking over off this cliff ledge, mm-hmm. over this ravine. It's not really a ravine. It's like a valley. There's an old drawing, NES style Link, and I haven't been able to run down
It's from the manual, I think.
It's either from the manual or it's from a piece of promotional material. I haven't been able to quite discern, but it's almost shot for shot kind of the same image.
Yeah, and when you look at it, it's one of those moments, because that piece of artwork from the original Legend of Zelda in the 80s is something that probably most of us have seen.
Right.
One place or another. And I hadn't thought about that image in a long time, but it was immediately familiar. And when you see it side by side with that view, it's like, okay, they're definitely doing this on purpose.
Right.
And that seems like a nice subtle message about really what they're shooting for in this one. Hmm. But John, I do want to add on a comment to what you said about it looking very modern and looking like, some of these other sort of open world exploration based adventure games that it seems like they're moving toward with the new Zelda, is that I think Zelda looks brighter. It looks more lush. I think the greens look greener, and it has there's more sunshine, I feel like. You know what?
Yeah.
The whole world, it's a little bit more warm and inviting than you see in a lot of these Western RPGs, where like the art design comes off in a lot of them as being kind of harsh and jagged and not very, there's this huge world, but do you really want to explore it? I mean, Skyrim is, it's like the northern reaches of Sweden for 100 miles in every direction.
Yep.
It's not the most beautiful. I mean, it is beautiful in its own way, but it's not necessarily the most inviting, exciting place to go out and tromp around. And to me, this new version of Hyrule or whatever world the new Zelda takes place in, that's what has me excited. Is like, I want to go there. I want to be in that place and see every inch of it.
Yeah, it seems to be it's all about the kind of world that they're trying to create, because, in Skyrim, it's like, think about it. It's like it's this harsh, world that, you have to survive, and, you could get killed at any time, and, you have to watch your back all the
time.
There's
a dragon going around talking like Randy Savage.
Exactly. You have to watch for those wrestlers flying through the air. But yeah, I mean, this is very obvious. They're trying to create a world that's inviting, that, you know, that you want to explore. I mean, very much in line with the rest of the series, really, at least, It's just very, very colorful and, you know, not totally cartoony, but still retaining that kind of whimsical feel, which
like, we're saying that, but we haven't seen the Dark World yet.
Well, we also have not seen any dungeons, which I think is important. You know, they've really focused on this overworld, and it does seem like that is the focus of the design, or at least that's kind of the newest, the stuff that they really want to tease us with. But dungeons are a huge part of every Zelda game, including that first one that they're hearkening back to, and we haven't seen those at all. And I'm really curious to see how they present those, and do they try to bring over the same kinds of scale and exploration elements into those dungeons that they have up above.
Then they sort of only kind of jokingly go, "Oh, is that a dungeon? Oh no, that's," and it's like, "Well, no, not really."
Yeah.
Like they sort of get there, but I think, you know, they're very knowingly going, "Huh, you're not gonna see that yet. Just chill out, brother."
Yeah. Well, what I like about the overworld design, I really like how they seem to be taking a cue from Skyrim, which took them only about 5 games to figure this out, but kind of giving people sort of convenient ways to mark things and navigate the environment. You know, they show where you can zoom in with the gamepad, and of course you have the map on the gamepad, which makes sense, but you can kind of mark where you want to go. So you can see something, you can zoom in on something that's far away, set a mark, and then that shows up on your map, which is pretty neat.
So you could do something like that in the 2DS games, but I mean, it would have been there'd been no reason to do that in Skyward Sword, because that game has a game world that's like 6 feet across.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yep.
And then also Bethesda with the game, you would have basically fast travel for the most
part. That's exactly it. Yeah. So, which to me kind of, I don't know. It's kind of, it makes things easier to travel around, but it also kind of defeats the purpose of trying to immerse you in the world, because I don't know.
It's like picking a location from a menu, basically.
Well,
Wind Waker kind of suffered from that, I felt. You know, I mean, there's been teleporting mechanics in Zelda going back to Link to the Past, but for me in Wind Waker, the exploration of that ocean was so much fun, and part of it was grueling because you're going around feeding the fish and not always getting much in return there for your effort. But once you learned that that Whirlwind song, it did, you know, I mean, I think they got away with it because they made those teleport, you know, you can only teleport to certain places.
It's like
those
three or four spots.
Yeah. And it was like the town, which you're going to go to a lot, but otherwise a lot of times they weren't even necessarily the most important islands. And it felt like usually you had to teleport, but also sail to get where you wanted to go. And so you would at least kind of fan out from those, you know, those common locations. And they could do something similar here, I think.
What I do like from the, and they brought attention to it, but what I like from what they've shown was the horse just dodging the trees. Because a lot of times, like when I go back to older games, like sure, I expect the new versions to look better, but then like you go back to the gameplay and stuff gets in the way, you know, like the games are a little bit more clumsy to play than you remember. So I do appreciate that they're giving extra attention to the horse riding, because I felt like riding Epona was never as much fun, or was not really as, I don't know, as painless as I felt it could have been.
Yeah, and it's not really like helping the kind of reality of the world. It's
not really.
You know?
Like the horse is stopping right next to a tree just because it's kind of touching it. Like it doesn't make sense.
And it's fun to do, but they mostly justify having Epona in the N64 games. In the N64 games, it's mostly to, you know, they put in these great race scenes that you have to do.
Right, but
and
actually,
also they put up some fences that you have to jump over. But I think really the only game in which the horse was really integrated and actually useful was Twilight Princess. And that game also suffered from the weird dichotomy of you could also just turn into a wolf and run as fast as the horse.
Right. I mean, you never actually had to get Epona in Ocarina of Time. You had to do the stupid thing and then do the stupid race and then jump out of the ranch. In Majora's Mask, you spend most of the game looking for the horse. And then in Wind Waker, horse isn't very much use.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is no horse in One Winged Kingdom. So I'm glad to see they're doing this. I, you know, looking at the footage of them bring out the sailcloth from Wind Waker, and I guess that was in Skyward Sword too, but it lets you. Oh well, it was the cloth in Skyward Sword, and Wind Waker it was the leaf. But,
right.
You know, they work the same way.
Yeah.
I think that's really good, and I'm sure that will be used very well. But seeing that giant expanse jumping out over the cliff and going out into that really big canyon. It also made me feel like I really hope there's some kind of airship equivalent by the end of the game, because that was what was so frustrating about Skyward Sword was the appeal of you have your own bird and you can just go fly whenever you want to, except the area that they let you fly around in isn't really that much fun to fly around in. It's not well designed. There's not that much in it.
Right.
So if they can bring that sort of mechanic into this world that is much larger and much more detailed and much more well connected, that's really appealing to me. And again, it's just like in a lot of RPGs, it might make sense to only do that at the end. But I think that would be really cool. I mean, that's one thing I think so far Xenoblade Chronicles has over this game, is that the promise that we might get to do some of that. And that stuff is exciting to me. You know, if you're going to build out this really big world, then you should give me a lot of cool ways to get around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just watching.
Maybe the
watching
spinner.
It here again.
The spinner.
Throw in the spinner. Yeah.
Get out of here.
That'll do it.
Hey, if you use it three times, you've used it more than was used in Twilight Princess.
Yep.
Did have a cool boss.
That was time number two. there was an optional chest out in the field that you could get, and that was number three, and I think that's really it.
Yeah, I remember the one. It was right by the bridge.
Yep. I think that's literally every time you use that fucking thing.
You might be right. Yeah.
Yeah, and I see on the map there the tracking time of day, so that's an interesting little thing to note.
I mean, they've been doing that for quite a few games now.
Yeah.
Which it's always kind of a weird thing on how you use it, because in Ocarina of Time, obviously, everything just goes completely to shit at nighttime.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see what they kind of do with it, if it's going to be anything beyond what they've done in past versions. You know, anything novel. Now that the world is more open, I'm not too sure if they're going to do anything with that.
Yeah, I'm not sure you'd want it to just be Skull Kids all the time at night.
Yeah.
Because that would be or Stalfos, because that would be a real pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love for there to be more natural-looking wildlife. You know, we saw the horses, the wild horses, which seem to be – they're there. They're not against you. They're not for you. They're just – you may or may not interact with them, but they're just hanging out.
Yeah.
And that's something that Zelda games – typically haven't done a great job of, is like having these environmental effects and you know, things that are there, but they just sort of enhance the believability of the world. They're not necessarily, you know, necessary to playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
I guess cuckoos to an extent, cuckoos have been around and I'd like to see them show up, but maybe just, yeah, I mean, at night, maybe different animals come out and not just more, you know, bokoblins or whatever they're called.
Yep. I see. Yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, it's looking really good. I can't say, you know, it's that's the thing. I want to see more. You know what
I
mean?
Sure.
I feel like I've only seen like the very, very basic part of the overworld.
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously holding for, you know, major events.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
it's going to be a good
E3. I think the interesting observation I had as I was watching them do this, and I watched, God help me. I watched that award show, at least the back half of it.
The whole thing?
The back half of it.
I only saw like the last
mostly because Twitter was going like, oh my God, really? Oh. And I was like, all right, you win. The cynic in me will sit through this. And yeah. But the takeaway I had from that presentation, so I saw that one and I saw the video that they did before that, but I missed the first one that Nintendo did. So that, I can't remember what the first – their first presentation, because they had a couple presentations. I just can't remember what they all were. But
well, the first one was the Mario Maker.
That's right.
That was the lead off.
Yep.
Because, you know, Sony didn't really do much at this show. They had their own thing the next day, which was pretty impressive, I thought. But that's me. We can talk about that another time. But Microsoft didn't really come up with anything. They were the one kind of left out this weekend. But Nintendo. They led off with the Mario Maker trailer where they showed the you know, the three in the world
right.
Content.
And they said it would really use the physics, which was something that people have been asking for out of E3, was that each of these games has their own physics. Please implement them accordingly.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer. Yeah. And then the, you know, and then they closed with Zelda. So that's basically what they had.
Right. And then we had Reggie's weird run as a cocaine addled talk show host where he was on stage doing things. You're like, dude, what are you doing right now?
Well, and then Koji Kondo is there for the intro and it was super awkward because it's like, and here's Koji. Look, we brought him.
Yeah.
For some reason. And then they finally, at the very, very end, the last, closing musical number, he was on stage. I thought that was done really nicely.
Yeah. That, it made more sense that he was there after that. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. They could have just waited.
Yeah. You probably should have sat on that one.
I didn't watch much of the show, but the general, impression I got was that there was at least less of the bad stuff from previous years that people hated so
much. Well,
yeah,
because, I mean, it's not being run by Spike or Game Trailers.
It doesn't necessarily have enough, like, good substantive content yet.
Oh, God, no.
And it also sounds very stretched out and kind of bloated.
It was 2.5 hours
amazing
long.
Amazing for an award show.
It was awful.
It sounds like they still need to, like, do more of the actual award presentations on screen. And maybe instead of having a bunch of celebrities come out and say, I'm a gamer. No, really. You know, maybe – and, you know, this was a very short production, kind of late notice thing it sounds like. So I'm sure they did a good job with what they had. But maybe for next year, you know, do more maybe like produced, like pre-programmed content on things that happened in video games that year or, you know – I like the stuff with Ken and Roberta Williams, bringing them out and you know, more of that kind of thing. More of like, here's why video games are cool and, you know, here's some, you know, dedications to like classic games. I just think that would be really nice.
I would say a little bit of the content in that show worked, which is already 100% improvement over its predecessor, where nothing on that thing worked at all.
All right. So just a quick check-in on the incredulity of this panel. Do we all think it's coming out in 2015, Zelda?
Well, they said it's coming out. They made the comment about Star Fox. Star Fox is going to be out before this.
Right.
I believe that.
Yeah. it had fucking better be.
That's the easy part for me.
I know.
Well, given how long it took for Pikmin to come out, I think it's a safe bet to say it won't make 2015.
Well, I think Pikmin just kept getting shot in the head and restarted.
Yeah, they made Pikmin twice.
At least. So here's the takeaway that I've got. Skyward Sword came out in 2011, I believe. It's 11, right? Because 12 was the Wii U launch, so it was the year before that. So yeah, 2011.
Yeah.
Nintendo's Zelda team wasn't the primary team developing Link Between Worlds. Grezzo made the Ocarina of Time port. Grezzo's working on the Majora's Mask port.
Mm-hmm.
So this, and obviously Anima's wasn't really super involved in Hyrule Warriors because otherwise the shit that happens in Hyrule Warriors wouldn't have happened. So they've been working on this game probably since 2011.
Yeah.
They've probably been doing pre-planning since mid-2011 because at some point they were done planning Skyward Sword. Mm-hmm. Additionally, keep in mind that in Skyward Sword, one of the most really telling things that you saw in there, in the credits of that game, was the prevalence of Monolith Soft, who apparently were providing tech out the ass for that game. My guess is they probably are building a singular engine that they are using to run things like Xenoblade Chronicles X and Zelda. Because why would they build multiple engines? They don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But those two games...
Those games are going to be in such close proximity to each other.
And those two games would demand a powerful engine. Nintendo's probably only building one. Monolith's probably building it. They've probably finished it. So I would say that art asset creation probably started almost 3 years ago.
Yeah.
The engine, they might have just gotten an engine. It may have just been fucking delivered to them with a bow on it. Like, here's your engine.
Well,
have fun.
It's probably more collaborative than that. But yeah, that's a good point. I mean, there's similar enough games and the kind of technology that it would seem that they both need. That maybe that does make sense. I think Zelda's going to be doing a lot more with motion controls, and I don't know how much of that how much that will really set it apart. I don't know how much of that will be optional. With that'll be really interesting to see, I think.
I would say that the other thing to note is that the biggest project they've had in terms of eating up artists and stuff would have been Smash Brothers, and that was outsourced for the art mm-hmm. art generation. So Nintendo has resources to make this thing. I mean, 3D World was done in 2013.
Yeah.
Right?
And Also, I mean, I'm sure the team that made this would be protected anyways. It's not like they would be shuffling.
Sure, yeah, but I mean, but there would be, in theory, there should be other assets inside the company they could leverage as well.
Xenoblade Chronicles X and Zelda sharing an engine, like, would that mean that online play would be baked into Zelda? Or
It would depend on how your engine is structured. There could be a separate engine. This is just the graphics and physics and stuff, and this is gameplay. I mean, engines is such a nebulous term.
Hmm. Yeah, but I just feel like with online, they've tried it a couple times, you know, in the DS and the 3DS, but there doesn't really seem to be much demand for that stuff. It feels like Nintendo's just experimenting. They throw that stuff in there because they think it's fun, but one talks about that. Does anyone really? I mean, who played Link Between Worlds online?
You can do that?
Yeah.
I did not know.
What the
I'm
fuck
pretty
is
sure
do online?
You can. I know you can Street Pass and do that little combat direct thing, but I want to say there's I know that Spirit Tracks and
Phantom Hourglass.
Oh, I kept wanting to say the Phantom Menace. Like,
yeah, that one.
But I know those both have online modes. I do think I think Zelda will come out in 2015, and part of it is because I feel like as Nintendo's other teams finish up their games earlier in the year, stuff like Kirby and Yoshi and even Xenoblade, I bet a lot of those teams will go like all hands on deck for a few months to help finish up Zelda, because I think Nintendo feels that this game needs to come out in 2015 for the viability of their platform, and they have so little help from anywhere else that they really are lining up their schedule around, you know, this as a holiday title. And the fact that they've been talking about it as basically the big 2015 game since early 2014, even, I feel like they're probably getting better at actually planning that stuff out.
Well, and
look no further than Smash Brothers, which, you know, there was a lot of doubt about whether that would actually come out this year, and they pulled it off, and it has a ton of stuff in it. I mean,
it seems like they just pulled it off. Like, even they were real gun shy about giving us dates.
Sure, but you know, just barely turned out to be good enough.
Yeah.
So they got it out, and that made a big difference. And Smash Brothers would not be doing as well if they released that in January.
Nope.
Yeah,
so
it's a
big deal.
And they got it out.
Nor
and
the
I mean,
Wii U.
The launch has not been it's gone really well.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. I mean,
compared to other games of similar size and scope. That it's,
well,
that
what Nintendo deems
disaster.
To be ready for launch is a higher standard than what a lot of other companies deem ready to launch.
It is a standard.
As we've seen, especially this generation.
So, yeah. I mean, one thing I would point out that leads me to think the 2015 date is more solid. I mean, they've done the, hey, this is a date. No, we're really not going to delay it this time, guys. Really? And then gone, hey, just fucking get it. And we delayed it. You know, there's a certain fool me once, I'm angry. Fool me twice, fuck you. Mm-hmm. But, like, they had, so an EAD team made Link Between Worlds. They brought in two other teams to help do development on that, a 3DS game, one of which was Monolith, again, providing tech. So they brought in outsiders to work on Smash Brothers. They are totally in on bringing in outside help to help them make games now. They will bring in whatever the hell they need to make this game launch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only way it doesn't launch in my mind is they go back and play it and go, ugh.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would be the part where they would stop it. And that's it.
Yeah, if it was something like that really needed to be, you know, if the tea table has to be upended, and it seems like it's way too late in the process for that.
So one thing that I did want to talk about, though, how they presented it real quick. It reminded me a lot of what they did at E3 in terms of their, you know, let's have two – like it's not somebody standing up reading out bullet points to a video that's played. It's two developers. It's almost always two developers who – one of whom is more intimately involved in the project than the other, except for Splatoon, where they had three and they were all on the project, but they had different roles.
This has a little bit of a Wada Asks.
A little bit. And,
you know,
and
it's just developers chatting with each other.
Yeah, and sometimes there is something to be gleaned out of that, like the Yarn Yoshi one, or whatever they call it game now, Woolly World. I mean, that one, it comes off as being kind of a fluff piece because, you know, they're walking around this yarn store. But, like, you... And Tezuka doesn't say a whole hell of a lot in it,
mm-hmm.
but you sort of, you know, you get the vibe that this is somebody kind of talking to a peer. I mean, they had bullet points to get through, but, you know, they don't – sit there and be like, it has, you know, 104 player support and just going through the list of items. It's more of a conversational thing.
Sure.
And
it strikes me as like John Lasseter talking to Hayao Miyazaki about, you know, on a DVD feature.
Yeah. And that's, and
it's collegial. It's very cute. And there's a lot of mutual admiration.
So like,
but it's not the most informative format.
No, it's not.
Are we asking when are we going to get our François Truffaut interviewing Hitchcock here or what?
No. My point is this is really sort of the new way that they've, you know, as sort of they've worked on trying to turn the corner on the Wii U, and they've been hitting much harder about games all the time. Let's talk about games, what we're going to get out there. And it's also kind of a response to, you know, investors who are trying to push them in another direction. Like, hey, these are games. We're going to talk about games. We're going to have people who make games talk about games. We're going to show you the people who make games and why they have to make them in our environment. I mean, this is, I would assume it's probably the producer of this game. We haven't heard. I would assume the guy that they brought over all the way back from Flagship, who's worked his way through up the Zelda chain, is probably heavily involved in this. Miyamoto's probably on the outside looking in.
Oh, yeah.
So this was kind of, you know, this probably was a longer conversation about this game between them, and they just sort of cut it down to some salient pieces because you saw where they jumped ahead in the video. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was something kind of charming about the little dig at Star Fox that Anuma got in. I mean, it was, there was a little bit of the, it's gonna be out after your Star Fox game. Sort of and a little knowing response from Miyamoto of like, yeah, it is. You're right. Like, there was something there about, you know, that felt a little bit more authentic than somebody just giving you bullet points about a game.
Well, I mean, this is the master and the apprentice. You know, Anuma learned to make video games under Miyamoto, you know, primarily on the Zelda series. So to see that it's just interesting to see Miyamoto still involved with the series, still talking about it and talking to the guy who's been much more directly involved really since Majora's Mask.
15 years about.
Yeah.
I mean,
it is Miyamoto's creation. That's why he's on the screen there, but also he's so removed from it. I would guess, I think you're right, James, that he's not very involved. He probably has veto power over, you know, major decisions.
But so you saw the same thing, though, with the Woolly World one, where it was Tezuka, and I'm trying to remember the other guy's name. I mean, that's Tezuka's baby.
Mm-hmm.
And this seems to be their new way of sort of packaging themselves of, it's about the games. Look, these are people who make games and understand games talking about games. It's not just like, we're going to sell you something now. Here we go. It's a very different. Even if the ultimate content of what they're doing, they're still sort of giving you kind of an idea of what the game is. It's presented in such a different way from how the rest of the industry presents games. It has just kind of a more, I think you're at a collegial feel to it. It's them just saying, we're going to do things our own way.
Well, also these two guys are both, you know, older gentlemen. And I didn't, like I said, I didn't see the whole award show, but I'm going to say they're probably among the oldest people, you know, who are on the show at all. I mean, they're about the same age as the Williams couple, and they've been retired for like 15 years, almost 20 years, 15 years. So the fact that Miyamoto and Anuma are both still going, they're both still being creative and making things that people really want, I think it's such a nice contrast to the other things that you were seeing. And I, for that reason, I think it's smart. Now, would I want them to do it over and over again, or, you know, do it the next time we see Zelda, it better not be like this, you know, like I thought it was an effective way of getting across some of these ideas and explaining things about the game to a larger audience that may not be as attentive to the details as like the people who work at our website who put together these analyses videos, you know, but
I feel fairly confident the next time we see that game, it will be either a two-person conversation like it was this time, or like the E3 where Anuma is talking about the game almost casually to you. Like I feel like this is, I mean, almost everything they showed at E3 was like that except Smash. And even then we still had, you know, he still talked about the game a lot, but they did do video, break, let's talk, more video, break, let's talk a little bit more, video. But everything else was, you know, video with conversation laid on top of it. And I think that's just their way of doing this stuff for the future going forward.
All right. So why don't we wrap up the Zelda talk? There will be plenty more chances throughout
Star
the
Fox
year
Lives,
to,
by the way. Hey.
To get into that. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Well, I would say of course.
you know, if they were going to be – Well, they must be in full-blown production now. So that's why he would feel confident enough saying something about it. And, you know, the fact that even though we still haven't really seen that game, you know, not much of anything, right. I still feel like it could come out before Zelda because it's just – it's a much simpler kind of game. I mean, presumably, you know, if it's kind of in the similar mold as the previous games in that series, it should not take 4 years to make that Star Fox. So I feel okay about that one. But I still do want to see, you know, that seems like maybe a Nintendo Direct coming pretty soon might kind of give us a real good glimpse at that one.
I would imagine that's a post June game. So
yeah. Oh yeah.
We might get a tease for E3 and then they'll blow it out there.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of games that are actually out, I have today played maybe an hour of Zeo Drifter. That's spelled with an X, Zeo Drifter, and it is the new 3DS eShop game from Renegade Kid.
Nice.
Now, this studio has been through a lot since the last game they released. I don't know if I should count Moon Chronicles because it's still not all out yet, and it's been kind of a tortured process. Apparently, the rest of Moon Chronicles, chapters 2, 3, and 4, which make up the remainder of the original DS game.
The majority of the game.
The majority of the game apparently is all going to be released at the same time. I don't know if it will be sold as like one pack or if you still have to buy those chapters separately or what they're going to be priced at. I felt the first chapter was kind of overpriced for what you got. But I was hoping that, you know, the follow-up chapters would be sold at a lower price to kind of make up for that. We shall see. And of course, Treasure Knots has been delayed in lieu of Zeo Drifter coming out first. They had problems with Occult County on Kickstarter. That game has now essentially been canceled because they got the rights to Dementium back. And Dementium will be coming to 3DS next year, I believe. So there's been a lot going on, but really the last full game they released on Nintendo platforms was Mutant Muds, unless I'm forgetting something. I think Mutant Muds was the main thing. And
well, there was I think that puzzle monkey game came after.
Oh yeah, Bomb Monkey. That's a good it's a very small game, but I actually like it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. That's a fair point. But yeah, I mean, Mutant Muds is what they're most known for at this point. It's been a big hit across a lot of platforms, and Zeo Drifter, although it's getting compared a ton to Metroid, and for, you know, really obvious reason, when you play it, it's like, oh, okay, this is clearly inspired by Metroid. But I think in a lot of ways, it feels more like Mutant Muds. It has the similar kind of, you know, like really solid, hefty platforming feel to it and very exacting enemy placement. it is a hard game. It is a really, this is, I'm surprised. Like right off the bat, Zeo Drifter is really tough. The jumping isn't too bad, but the enemies are tough. They take a lot of hits, until you get some upgrades for your gun. And, especially the bosses, some of their attacks are just really hard to dodge. So I've been impressed with the level of challenge, and I would be completely over the moon about it if there were way more checkpoints, because this game almost discourages exploration, I would say, by how much there is to lose if you die and how easy it is to die.
Yikes.
And you can go, I mean, I've played for, you know, sometimes 10 minutes trying to get out of an area after I killed a boss. I mean, there are checkpoints when you kill bosses or when you get to a boss, and that's good because then you can try the boss as many times as you need to kill it. But then you kill the boss and it saves again. And then you have to get back to your ship to get a save point. Like this isn't Super Metroid where there's save points around the levels. I haven't seen any so far. You have to get back to your ship, and that could be a really long retracing and with a bunch of really tough enemies and a bunch of environmental hazards. And I've gotten close a couple times to getting back where I need to go and then die by something that I couldn't even see, you know, like an enemy right at the edge of the screen, which I'm sure a lot of people will also remember from Mutant Muds. And when you lose 10 minutes of progress, that is not a good feeling. That's, I don't think that's something you should want players to experience.
And this is like, you say there are no save rooms. So this is not kind of a Castlevania kind of thing where you miss the save room and then, oh shit, you died.
Right. I don't think so. Even a game like Circle of the Moon, Castlevania on GBA and now Wii U has more save points than this.
Right.
I mean, and that game is really kind of lacking in that regard as well. But this game, as far as I've seen, does not have save rooms. It has a checkpoint when you get to a boss room and after you beat the boss, and otherwise you have to get back to your ship, and the levels are pretty big. So anyway, it's a complaint so far. I've been struggling with it, you know, before we started recording, and getting kind of frustrated, but I will say also, I mean, the game feels really nice. I think it looks great. And, you don't do it right away, but one of the earlier power-ups you get lets you shift between the foreground and the background at will. Now there's certain places you can't do it, but in general, you can just push a button and you do it. So you have more control over it than you did in Mutant Muds, and it becomes more of a puzzle solving, and exploration aspect because of that. It's not just, you know, this kind of linear sequence where you have to go in the background and then you have to come back, you know, at certain places on the ground. You can just sort of do it anywhere. And so it makes you kind of pay more attention to, what you see in the background and whether that might help you get around things. So I like the way they've handled that. And, the music is pretty good too. So I think there's a lot to like here. I've heard that it's kind of short. Again, that doesn't surprise me, and I don't really have a problem with that. It's a $10 game, and I don't have any reservations about recommending it, except that I feel like people should just be aware it's really challenging. And I hope that that ultimately doesn't kind of lower my view for it. So far I do like it. And I'm excited to play more, but I'm also a little concerned about what I've seen so far, just in terms of how much I'm having to replay sections over again, just because, you know, something jumps out at me. I mean, these are not little tiny levels that you can almost memorize a path through, like in Mutant Muds. It's a big world. It's all connected. I don't think you should be expected to remember where every single thing is. So we'll see. But so far, I would say, I mean, it does seem to be really high quality, very polished. And it's fun, you know, if you're into Blaster Master and Metroid and, Mega Man and Mutant Muds, then you should check it out. That's exactly, it's just a mix up of all that stuff. So,
I plan to, and I plan to play Shantae, and,
I think Shantae grabbed me faster than this has. Okay. The Zeo Drifter. I think Shantae is, you know, I did talk about it, but that game will come up again at the end of the year. I'm pretty sure that game is worth playing. Absolutely. On 3DS. It's pretty fantastic.
Awesome.
It's very immediately satisfying. Zeo Drifter, I think is a tough start. It feels like it's going to be a bit of a slow ramp up, but, I hope to love it by the end. One other thing I've been playing this week, trying to get back into and finish Puppeteer, which I hadn't played in about a year. I played like a few levels of it back last holiday season when I got it on sale on PS3. And it didn't quite grab me in the early stages, and I was curious to go back to it and see if it did any better, and it has. I think Puppeteer is a game where the first few levels are the worst content in the game, because you're not really used to what it's doing, and also it's more leveraged on basic platforming and kind of the simple combat in the game, which are not that great. And as the game adds more mechanics, the platforming just becomes a lot more complex and almost puzzly later on with the different kinds of actions that you pick up. I feel like the level design gets better and more fun, and you spend less of the time doing the things that I feel like don't really come across as well. So the problem with Puppeteer is that it feels like a professional studio made a big 10 or 15 hour long game in the Little Big Planet engine. So it's very physics-y, and the jumping doesn't quite feel right, and the cutting action of your sword is like basically like a giant pair of scissors. And you sometimes wield it like a sword, but a lot of times you just use it to cut things. You cut enemies, you cut things in the environment that let you, move around faster. And that stuff is fun when it works, but the collision detection or the clipping or whatever you want to call it for using those scissors, it never quite feels right. It always feels like you're kind of cutting at something. And sometimes you see the effect of it and sometimes it doesn't. It's just not a very reliable game action. So it doesn't quite feel right. But again, as they introduce other things for you to do, I feel like that becomes less of a problem. And maybe I'm just getting used to it as well. But the notable thing about Puppeteer is really that, I mean, it is a 2D platformer, and you'll be doing a fair bit of that, you know, when you play the game, but also you spend a large chunk of this game just watching it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, not only they borrowed the engine of Little Big Planet, they borrowed the amount of talking that the game does, and just, like, it doesn't let you just run and jump. You run, you jump. Wait, you got to listen to these two people. Okay, now you can run again. No, wait. There's more story. And now here's Stephen Fry, you know?
Yeah, and even when you're not, even while you're still playing, you're still controlling the character, the game continues to talk at you the entire time.
But most of the time, it stops you from moving forward, though, right? Like it's kind of like Half-Life, no? Like in Half-Life, where you're trapped in a room and someone is talking at you and you're trying to, you know, kill them with your crowbar and you can't.
That is a minority of the game later on. There might be a high ratio of it in the early goings, but later on, I feel like it's just that even as you're playing the game, there's two or three characters like arguing with each other over you playing this 2D platformer. It's like this game has so much narration. It has two or three different narrators, tons and tons of different speaking characters, and I think the voice acting is really good, and I think the writing is at times legitimately funny, and not just in like a childish, cute slapstick way, but like there's some actually really good jokes and gags in there. But oh my gosh, there's way too much of it. It is excessive. I mean, the presentation of this game is really overwhelming to the point that it's literally confusing sometimes when you play the, like, I don't know if I'm still playing. I don't know if what I did was good. I don't know where the level actually is on the screen because, you know, the nature of this stage that you're playing on changes so often. It's so dynamic that it's hard to get a feel for like, what am I actually standing on? What is interactive here in this scene? Because the art style is just all over the place. And, the narration is so excessive. I realized this morning as I was playing it, it's almost like the game has its own built-in podcast where these people are talking about you playing the game and they're talking about the game and they're like acting out what they think is the story of the game. But it's all done in like really long form, almost improvisational type scenes where people are doing different characters, and it comes across as like a weird Comedy Bang Bang type skit. If you've ever heard that show, you know, where you've got like some well-known comedian is on there, but he's doing a voice impression as another celebrity and he's making him say all these ridiculous things. Kind of like you remember the old Schwarzenegger lip moving thing on Conan O'Brien? You know, it has almost that kind of a quality to it sometimes, where it just feels like they're riffing and just kind of making things up and just kind of talking for the sake of talking a lot of times. It's weird. I mean, the game really seriously needs an editor. And I say that as someone who, like, you know, produces and sometimes edits a show. Like, and on our show, talking is all you get. So we have to do a lot of talking. But in a video game, I don't know that I want to hear the characters and the narrators talking the entire time. And that's exactly what you get with Puppeteer. So I think there's some poor decisions in there, but at the same time, I mean, the production values are astronomical. I mean, the game is so pleasant to look at. It's so interesting. And I think it would probably delight a lot of younger players, like maybe in the upper single digits or even the lower teens, because the storytelling is very like super fast paced and rat-a-tat-tat jokes. And, you know, the action is like super silly and nonsense, but it moves so fast that you can't really tell when it makes these giant leaps of logic. And the style of it all kind of comes across as one of these like computer generated movies that they make for kids, you know, like the kind of mediocre ones that are popular, but, you know, they don't really get any critical acclaim. But it's stuff like, I don't know, Open Season and, you know, like all these weird kind of, you know, DreamWorks and Fox Interactive or whatever. right. They put out, you know, they're not Pixar quality, but they're okay, I guess, you know, Ice Age or something like that. It has that kind of a feel. I recently saw The Penguins of Madagascar with my toddler niece and nephew. And playing this game actually kind of reminds me of that experience. It's like what's happening on screen barely makes sense, but they go so fast and it's all so silly that you have to imagine, like, I mean, you know, when you're young enough, this stuff must be very delightful, and fun. But as an adult, it feels just like way too much. You know, it's just so hyperactive, and I don't know. You know, it feels like someone should have had a little bit steadier hand with editing this the script and this presentation. But it's impressive nonetheless, and it can be a really fun 2D platformer at times. It is not of Nintendo caliber, I'll say, but it might still be worth playing, and I certainly like it a lot better than Little Big Planet. It's more cohesive than that, and it feels even better than that. But it's got some issues too. But you can get it super cheap nowadays. So if you're really into 2D platformers, that's why I thought you would like it, Guillaume.
Maybe. I'll have to look. I think maybe by mistake I let my PSN Plus subscription lapse. If not, I have this game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I bought it before they put it out there. I'd forgotten that it was available for free or for Plus members, but that makes sense. So it seems worth playing. It does certainly get a lot more interesting as you go. You pick up more powers and you go to a lot of, you know, very different environments, and that stuff has been engaging for me. So I'm sure I'll finish it pretty soon here. But why don't we move on to you, Guillaume, and hear about what you've been playing.
So I've been playing a demo for a game that was sent to me by this guy named Trent Steen, someone whom I've never met.
That sounds like a made-up name.
Well, maybe not. I don't know. I don't know him enough. But yeah, someone that I've known basically for 10 years as a secret tunnel, like from the IGN message boards, you know, like a big fan of Nintendo and, you know, like a huge fan of the BitTrip series. And now apparently he's a game developer. He sent me this demo, via a Dropbox link. So, I think that it's, you know, this demo you can only get if you ask for it. But he sent me, the demo to his game called Shapes of Grey. And, it's the anti, colorful indie twin stick shooter. Instead of being colorful, it's really like it's Shapes of Grey. And, instead of being a twin stick shooter, you're swinging a sword around with the twin sticks. It's kind of an interesting game. Like I really got addicted just to playing the demo. The demo was 50 levels of, you know, being swarmed by these enemies, and you try to kill them with, you know, a very limited range sword. And, their movements start out very, very simple. Like they're bouncing around in the arena, which is circular. And you try to destroy them as quickly as you can because you're timed. And if you're not fast enough, then it's game over. You've got some shapes that are going to be homing at, you know, towards you. And, so, you know, like it's really like get clear of the screen as fast as you can. You've got maybe like at most 10 seconds, then you move on to the next stage.
Guillaume, what platform is this coming to?
So, this is eventually coming to Wii U. I think he's got a Wii U development kit. But what I played was this demo on PC. He's trying to get it greenlit. So if you want to go head to, you know, on Steam, go to Greenlight and, search for Shapes of Grey, you can see the trailer and, you can vote for it. But yeah, like it's a lot of fun and it's very, very demanding. Like it's very, you don't score points, which I find weird because you would think, okay, you're trying to, you know, get at the top of to the top of the leaderboards, but no, there's no points at all. You've just basically got these three hearts, three hit points, and you gotta clear maybe like 10, 15, 20 stages until you reach a boss, beat it, and then that's the checkpoint. So yeah, like it's very tough, and, I was swearing at my computer, trying to get to the, I only made it, like basically you start at level 50 and you count down, and I made it to, level 5 and kind of gave up that night. But yeah, like very addicting, very fun, and I'm looking forward to playing, you know, eventually, you know, the game, maybe on Steam, maybe on Wii U. But yeah, look forward to it.
Sounds cool.
The other game, I've been all over the place. I've played more Smash, but mostly, I did not expect this, but I've been mostly playing Mario Kart 8. ever since the expansion pack came out, not the expansion pack, but the DLC, I just got back into the game and it's a lot of fun. And I'm always playing it co-op with Karen. And now my ranking or my points or online score, whatever it is like around 4,000 points, which seems like a lot. because you start out with like 1,000 points initially, and then you can lose points or gain them. So the more you win, like as long as you're in like the top 8 players, in a 12 racer race, I think you gain points, and otherwise you lose them. So yeah, like I've been, playing a lot, and, it's a ton of fun, but because I'm playing with Karen, she hasn't been really faring as well. She's still like struggling to control the, like to find out how to optimally, drift through tracks, you know, and, she still didn't really know all the shortcuts and most of the tracks. So, eventually, like, we went into the time trial mode and we just went through all the tracks, and I would point her like, okay, so, you know, this is a fake bush, and you can, if you've got a mushroom, you can zoom through it and, you know, you can get through there.
Well, that's how you get good.
Yeah, that is how you get good. And it just makes me resent the fact that the single player is so unfun, because you know, like you would hope that the single player would be good training, for that. Like that would be the place where you experiment, where you get better at the game. But because it's so boring, there's no really incentive to do that. And the multiplayer, like everyone is so much more vicious online that it's really not the ideal place to be learning like the racing line, or, you know, learning how to drift or anything like that. So it's really, really bad. And compounded with the fact that, they got rid of the automatic drifting that was in the Wii version, you know, like I really think they shouldn't have gotten rid of that feature, because it was really helping, you know, people new to the game. Add to that the fact that there are so many parts and so many carts, like it's a pain in the ass, you know, like she's been going from changing parts, changing, characters, but although staying with, you know, those characters that she finds appealing, and, just never really settled on something that really felt right until today. Because actually before recording this, I was like, well, let's play, you know, a little game of Mario Kart 8 before I record. And, she apparently found the perfect cart wheel combination for Luigi, and it's been pretty amazing actually, because she would always rank in like last, next to last, or like in the bottom four, and the last few races that we did, we were constantly like number one and two, or maybe she was third or fourth, and that is just amazing, the difference it can make.
Yeah, sometimes things just click.
So tons of fun now, and you know, like I'm just glad that she stuck with it for this long, because it can't have been fun to keep losing, you know, all the time. And, yeah, I'm just glad that she stuck with it until, like, it finally clicked. And, we've tried, like, we tried to log in with her account where her score is much lower, like, trying to get matched with people with more reasonable scores online. And, so we got yesterday, like, we got, put against a bunch of people who had around like 1,000 points. So, you know, like they were supposed to be newbies. They were supposed to be not very good at the game, but they were a bunch of little fucking sharks. Like it was just, we both got our ass kicked by a whole bunch of me's that didn't even have names and had like the default features. It was horrendous.
I wonder, you know, I wonder if like really seasoned trolls on Mario Kart are maybe doing – they're kind of doing like a hack of the prestige mode from Call of Duty, where they're – maybe if you like delete your save data or something from your Wii U, then it resets you back down at 1,000, and it pairs you up with a bunch of people who you're going to cream when you play them online. And maybe people get a satisfaction out of that.
Maybe. Like it stands to reason that because the Wii U's – user base is so low, it's mostly just diehard Nintendo fans, you know, for the most part, that are playing online. So yeah, like you kind of expect that. You expect stiff competition, but wow, like that was worse than when we were matched with people with good scores. So I don't know what happened there, but it was not pretty.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mario Kart 8, it's pretty amazing, and it's keeping me from, like, this game from back in May is keeping me from playing all these new releases, and that's kind of weird.
That says a lot. Yeah. All right, well, James, why don't you help us wrap up new business?
So, I have a problem, and... actually, I'm perfect otherwise. And we've touched on this problem a lot. It's been a topic on the show for at least 3 years at this point. And that problem is sort of the anti-John problem. It's, I really can't help myself when I'm dealing with Capcom. And I'm not sure why. At one point, they didn't comprise half of my DS collection, which I would imagine rates favorably to pretty much everybody on the show.
Capcom was a monster on DS.
And it's something like 11 or 12 DS games.
Yeah.
At current in my collection. So I have a problem, and that problem becomes doubly manifest when you start walking around the sacred, you know, trinity of Ace Attorney, Mega Man, and please God, let there be another one, Ghost Trick. So they released the Phoenix Wright. It's not collection, but the that was previously called 1-2-3 in Japan. It's essentially just exactly that. It is a half remake of the first three games in the series. And I played this at E3. And my takeaway from it was they redid the art. It's actually the art from the iPad version of these games. But then they went and made it 3D. And by 3D, I mean they popped out like the character layer, and then they recessed the background layer. So sometimes you get weird things like where, in case two, and Maya is in the detention center, and the foreground frame of the window that she's sitting in, looks like it's slightly behind her character model, like a millimeter behind. So it's kind of weird, but in general, it looks okay. My takeaway from playing that game that I shouldn't have bought was that if they had made the 3DS Ace Attorney games this, that they kept the sprite art and threw them in kind of this weird 3D planing stuff, I probably would have been okay with it, but I'm glad they didn't. So seeing that now, actually seeing the other alternate history they could have done for making Ace Attorney games, it sort of feels weird, but I think it was a good way to try to bundle these three games together. So, I mean, you're getting, if my estimation is right, about 15 cases for the price of what is one Ace Attorney game. So there's a lot here. It's the games that pretty much everything else is the same. I am just creaming these cases because even though I haven't played the first game in about 7 years, maybe 6 years, I remember enough that I can get through them pretty quickly. But it is nice just to be able to go back and just kind of play them casually, because it's been a long time since I've played that game, and I've kind of forgotten how much the localization matured as those games progressed. But
didn't they redo the translation a little bit on this trilogy package?
They say, but they also said they redid the music at one point, and it is a recording now versus being rendered by the sound chip. But I mean, they probably fixed. So these games are notorious for their typos and spelling mistakes and just complete grammar buffoonery. And I would guess they fixed that stuff. They may have cleaned up the localization a little bit, but we still ran into the situation with April May where there's just constant innuendo in her phrases, and like sometimes it just doesn't make any sense because they were going for something and obviously missed the point.
That's the kind of thing where I can see why they might want to leave that in, or they felt like people would be pissed off if they took that stuff out.
But nobody thinks back fondly on April May's role in the Ace Attorney franchise.
I don't even know. I don't even remember who that is.
She's the in the first game. She wears the pink outfit and hits on everybody, and is been in lots of weird horrible fan art.
I played that game about 10 years ago, so I really don't remember it.
It's kind of weird to go back because, I mean, I've played one a few times, three or four times, but it's been a long time. So seeing that game again it is nice to be able to see how that franchise has matured over the years. It's still, you know, I'm still enjoying it. There's something visceral about that gameplay, about the actual, like, the court segments of that game.
Visceral. That is not a word I would ever associate with
Phoenix
Wright.
No, it really is, though. Like, there's a tremendous, it'll be like this slow burn, and then
you can just smell the mahogany of the courtroom.
Yeah, you can. and then stuff will just suddenly explode for, you know, a brief period, and then it goes back down. And there's this constant rising
tension.
When you
say things explode, you mean dramatically.
Yeah, like there's just a moment of just a – well, in
the later, judge bursts into flames.
In later games, yes, he does, John, but that's beside the point. in at least two games, the courtroom blows up. But but like there's this – it'll be like it'll start at a plat level, and then there'll be this really brief moment of just incredible action for static characters. And then it just goes up a level and it just keeps doing that until it sort of resolves. And there's not a lot of games that kind of give you that weird, like, spike crescendo methodology towards revealing story. So there's something I really enjoy about these games. If you haven't played these games, like, this is actually a really good deal because you're not going to be able to get all three of these games, at least not on the DS for this price. You can probably get weird digital versions they released, individual cases.
I mean, in a way, this is kind of like a GBA virtual console release on your 3DS. It's what you've always wanted.
Well, it's except they actually written remade the game. This is supposed to GBA games.
Remade is a seems I mean, like a bit of a
all
stretch.
All the art is new, and you could tell. Mm-hmm. It looks nice. And
I didn't know they had gone through that much trouble.
Yeah. So it's the iPad art was HD art. I mean, because it was a late iPad game later.
Oh, okay.
So they just went and reworked it for the 3DS screen. Some of the characters look a little off, and it's probably got something to do with either they always look that way, and it's just how they've sort of softened everybody's faces in the later 3D games. Because they have done a lot of that. Maybe that was part of it, or maybe just the higher resolution, like, their features come out weird. It's weird seeing this game kind of more vibrant and nice looking. I don't know. I'm happy with it. I shouldn't have bought it. I'm aware of that. This is essentially the equivalent of junk food for me. But yeah, you know, it's on my 3DS now. There ain't no stopping it.
And did they include the fifth case and like the bonus fifth case? Or?
All cases on the DS release of the first three Ace Attorney games are there.
Okay. Good.
So it's 5, 4, 5 in terms of cases. So which means at some point I'm gonna have to suffer through the second game, but that's okay. I'll get through it.
even though you could skip it, you're just gonna.
Well, no, because I gotta get to that last case, and that last case is the best case in the series.
So you're a data torture.
I have
soldier.
To play the three shittiest cases in the series to get to that one. Fuck you, Capcom.
James Jones problems right there. Start
you
that.
Can,
hashtag
you
up.
Can mm-hmm. start playing any game you want, but you still have to work through the cases. So you can't
At that point, I would just grab my copy of the second game and start the last case.
But it doesn't look as nice.
I'll stick with the Metroid Prime trilogy. Thank you very much. that's going to wrap up new business. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking about, via some listener mail, we'll be talking about the latest Wii U sales numbers and what they might mean for the future of that system versus how we felt a year ago.
Now playing, a sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com. First up this week, we have a feature. I need to change my tone of voice to get into this one.
This is very serious, James. Very serious.
I need to tap into my inner Bill Curtis. We have a feature. The Disappointed Scarcity by Neil Ronhan. In an editorial that transitions between somber tones and blistering indignation, Neil exposes the true danger in addictive collecting. He cautions that you simply cannot get all the amiibo.
You can't, James. They're out there.
And to try is to endanger your own well-being.
It's just making yourself happy.
Or unhappy. It is a piercing reminder that not just about Amiibo, but about life.
Don't judge me, James.
All the time, John.
My happiness is not your happiness.
It's true. All right? Is your happiness found in holding a villager Amiibo? Because you never will.
Maybe I keep it with me at all times. But there's nothing wrong with that.
So right? Listeners, John Lindemann's apartment has a villager Amiibo if you feel the need to break in and steal one.
It's a villager. Shut up. I have two copies. One that's not open because it'll be worth something someday. Shut up.
Yeah, right now.
Go don't look at me. Don't look at me. I'm an idiot. Don't look at me.
So now that we've transitioned from the Phantom of the Opera, let's talk about a video. Zelda Deep Dive by Neil Ronahan and John Reardon. Neil and John take a look at the Game Awards trailer for the new Zelda game, and whoo boy, is it pretty. They pick it apart and replay it ad nauseum, so if you're excited about Zelda that you're barfing, you'll be right at home. Ew.
Yeah.
That's gross.
Hey, Zelda.
I mean,
you know?
That's how I felt about, like, Amiibos, but...
Maybe you're just not cut out to collect them. I mean...
I barf...
You need a strong stomach.
I barf for two-gun Samus Amiibos.
You need a strong stomach to, you know, bust through that Walmart line and run straight to the toy section.
To do this podcast.
All right. We have a review also of Watch Dogs on Wii U by Don Koopman. Man, I'm getting tired of writing about these third-party Wii U game reviews and now playing. Thank goodness I no longer have to worry about that now that Watch Dogs has been released. First party for life.
I think we did the math and it ended up being something like 200-something days since the game came out. On
yeah.
Platforms.
Yeah.
And it's not any better, Ubisoft.
No, it's really not any better. So.
Ubisoft is obviously our publisher of the year.
Yep. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, they released, what, one game? Sweet. All right. And we have a review of Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney Trilogy for 3DS by Andy Gergen. Andy reviews this trifecta of red hot justice and warns us not to play all three games back to back to avoid burnout. Elsewhere, James is already on his third complete playthrough in 3 days.
It's not an addiction. It's a choice.
So you're saying
I've
that
made
I shouldn't
a choice.
You're saying that I shouldn't judge you, James.
You should judge because that's what this game is about. It's about judging. And you should judge me, not guilty.
I think what we need is a jury and especially an executioner here.
I think I'm my own executioner, so we're fine. All that and more stupid nonsense at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Welcome back, everyone. For the remainder of this episode, I thought we would talk about an email that we got a few weeks ago, actually, and the email specifically asked us to hold it for this episode because it would be the approximately 1 year anniversary of our episode I don't have the number pulled up right now, but it was called The Day the Music Died. And it was
it'd be like 359, somewhere in there.
Yeah, ish. High 350s. And it was a monumental episode for our show. I mean, we got about as much feedback on that episode as any that I can remember in years of doing this. And it got a very strong response, a lot of very, you know, well thought out emails and forum comments about
somber.
It. And somber, you know, and some people disagreeing with us and disagreeing with the things I said, or people just kind of objecting to the tone. But it was, you know, we were looking at the November sales data for Wii U a year ago and saying, wow, this is real bad. This isn't just a bad launch. This is a bad launch year. And they don't seem to be doing what they need to kind of turn this around. And, you know, we're in a different era right now for the system. And I think things generally look up, but, we'll see. We'll talk about it. So
362
anyway,
is the episode number.
362. Okay. Yeah. Good to know. If you have not heard that, it's probably worth going back to listen to. I know a lot of people have told us that it's one of their favorite episodes, even though it may be a little bit dour. But it would also be, it'd be a good context setter for what's about to happen. So John, could you please read the email that we got? And then we'll make reference to some of the data that we got today and talk about the differences.
Sure. Alexander writes, 1 year ago, December the 15th, 2013, the music died. RFN became about serious business instead of new business. That's a great line. Some of the most damning things the RFN crew have ever said about Nintendo came to light, and everybody and their mothers forecast doom and gloom for the Big N and how hard they had fallen from grace thanks to their obtuse little console. Flash forward to now. Mario Kart 8 has strangely refreshed that franchise. Super Smash Bros. For Wii U has had an impressive attach rate, and a fervor is building over stuff like Splatoon, Yoshi's Woolly World, Xenoblade Chronicles X, and a number of other titles. The third-party game still looks really bleak, and things are still shaky, but with strategies like Amiibo and the swath of games out on, and on the horizon, as well as the stronger indie relationships, I believe we're out of Virtual Boy territory. Is the current picture does the current picture looks to have saved the Wii U? Can we claw our way back up to GameCube numbers? With tablet PCs starting to fall off a cliff, what does that mean for the gamepad? Are you still expecting the Wii U to have that shortened lifespan that you guys were forecasting last year?
I want to say, if anybody ever compares anything to the Virtual Boy, smack them. The only thing that compares to the Virtual Boy is the fucking Ouya. 770,000 is the Virtual Boy sales numbers.
770,000. Okay, even Vita's done better than that.
I said Ouya.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know what Ouya sales are like, but I know Vita's sales are bad, but they're better than that.
Yeah.
Not a ton better, but they are. Anyway, yes. I mean, it's better than Virtual Boy, and I think we all expected that, but it's not up to GameCube, which was the previous worst performing console that Nintendo has had.
21.74 million GameCube.
Yeah, and at the same time now, GameCube has sold almost twice as many consoles as Wii U at the same point in their release, 2 years out. So
GameCube
Wii U
had...
is the worst. It's the worst performing console Nintendo's ever had. That's a fact.
I will say the GameCube though had a fairly hot start in terms of game releases.
Oh, yeah, the first 2 years of that system were,
I would say, we're kind of seeing a weird inversion of the GameCube lifespan here, because the GameCube's last few years were not as nice.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was when third parties all but abandoned it.
Right, the third parties were never here to begin with, so we're great.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Yeah, I really don't know what to base my. Like, I feel like all I've got right now is anecdotal evidence, and it's telling me two different things. Like, I've seen in the, you know, local paper, like, they were pitting the Xbox against the PlayStation 4, and the Wii U was a footnote. So, and the big question was, well, where is the support for 2015? You know, like, we basically don't know anything about any game coming out except a few from Nintendo itself. And we pretty much know that no third party is going to jump in.
Right.
So that's our main point.
The games that we know about are the games. I mean, if you're not excited about a new Kirby and a new Yoshi and Splatoon and a new Zelda and a new Xenoblade, then don't buy a Wii U, because those are the games that are coming out on the Wii U next year.
Yeah.
There might be one game next year that we don't already know about. But
I would say this goes back to
E3. I mean, they really showed their hand at E3, because I felt like they had to. They were desperate, and it actually worked. But what that means is there's not as much surprise about the lineup next year. I think we already know almost all of it.
I mean, there might be some smaller stuff. They might drop a WarioWare on us. They might drop a couple eShop original games on us.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in terms of their big tentpole releases, Splatoon's fairly early this year. They revealed that about half a month ago, that was a fairly early game, which I think we were kind of taken aback by. I expect that game to be later.
Yeah, I think it'd be summer or maybe early fall.
I
still feel like summer is likely for it.
It sounds like Star Fox is probably a post E3. Xenoblade is obviously late year. Well, maybe not, but I would think it's probably a late year. It could be a pre-summer RPG for release in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Zelda's obviously end of year. Mario Maker, did they give us a date on Mario Maker?
No, still not.
Yeah, but probably early in the year or earlier.
I have a question for you guys. Do you think Mario Maker is going to be sold in stores?
Yeah, I think it will be. I mean, they'll sell Captain Toad in stores. I think they'll sell that to stores.
Yeah,
too.
I mean, maybe not at first, but I think it'll have a retail release at some point.
I kind of agree, but that also makes me wonder just how much content is in that package. I mean, you know, what kind of what we got the indication from the Game Awards trailer is that, well, there's more to this game than they showed in the past. We kind of expected that. But at some point...
I mean, we saw a tech demo at E3, ultimately.
Sure. Yeah, sure. With this kind of game or application or whatever you want to call Mario Maker, it's a little bit hard to tell, right? Because it is kind of its own development tool. So it's hard to get a feel for how complete or how mature it is when you play it at a press event like that.
Sure.
But anyway, my point being, if this is going to be a $40 or $50 or $60 retail release, that might lead you to wonder just how much more is there that we haven't seen yet.
I would say you're kind of looking at kind of a Made in Wario space where we're probably going to have – there's probably going to be levels that Nintendo junior developers created goofing off on the thing. You know, maybe 30 of those. And I would think you're probably looking – maybe even less than maybe 20. I think you're probably looking at Cap'n Toad pricing structure here. And that's probably okay. I mean, if assuming, and this had better fucking be there, that you can just download stages off the internet.
Right. Yeah, that's the big piece that they still haven't shown.
I mean, if it's not there, this product is not worth $20. If it's there, you could start to talk about the $40 price range. I mean, it makes that much of a difference.
Mario Maker, to me, feels like almost a holiday title. It's something that people understand at first blush, you know, like, oh, you can make your own Mario levels. Wow, that's really cool. To me, that's something that they should make a big deal out of on Black Friday.
Yeah,
and
but
it's a counterpoint to Zelda, which is this big, intimidating, you know, giant adventure that might be a little over some people's heads. You know, like that might feel like a little bit too much. Whereas Mario Maker, to me, has such a mass appeal if they figure out how to show it to people.
Maybe. I would think you'd want that game out sooner though, because it's kind of one of those ones that you can keep people going and connecting to your online space and interacting and getting stuff.
Well, is there a possibility that the game might have like a full campaign, like a full some sort of full sequel to New Super Mario Brothers U? Or
I don't think
they would position it that way, but I think it might have. They might put something together that is of the same length as a Mario game. You know, here's a sequence of crazy levels that we made, try them out, and maybe they number them. But I don't think it would be presented as like, this is the new Mario platform.
So the other way that I was thinking through what you could do with this game, because I spent a lot of time just kind of contemplating business stuff in the last couple of days. Like if you're trying to position a product. So, you know, it originally I was thinking about it from the context of Smash Brothers and Amiibo, but like, a way you can sort of invert that besides just creating levels. So you can play these levels as much as you want because the game lets you stop if you screw up and just rewind. So there's a certain amount of the challenge that's decreased there. What if instead they gave you like mostly complete levels and gave you a limited palette to finish the level so that you could beat it? Like something like that. Yeah. Like there's some alternate gameplay decisions that they could play with here. I mean, we're pontificating, obviously, but I think that's going to be more than just, here's a bunch of tile sets, go have fun.
Yeah, you call it the puzzle mode. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, that makes sense. But anyway, we're talking a lot about a game that's not even mentioned in Alexander's email.
Sure.
and is nowhere near the current sales data. So let's refocus on that just a little bit, because I think there's plenty of territory to dig into there. So just to – in case you haven't heard the news, so this data comes out the day that we recorded this episode. So it's a little bit preliminary, but it looks like the Wii U hardware sold about 10% better in November 2014 than it did in 2013. That's not real impressive, obviously, because the number was so low last year that it made us name that episode The Day the Music Died. So 10% over that doesn't seem like quite a turnaround, but I also want to caveat that by saying the sales have been so much better the past few months. So, I mean, they probably didn't spike the way Nintendo wanted them to in November, but they didn't have price cuts. They didn't have very good bundles. They didn't have a ton of new games coming out the way the other systems do. No, a ton is a stretch, but they certainly haven't been marketing it as heavily that I've seen. So that could be it. And also, there's still December, you know. I mean, December sales tend to be, I want to say, about 25% higher than November. I think that there's a case here for, if Nintendo does a few things right, maybe they can beat that average and maybe they can do better than normal for December, but you know, I mean, they were just on Ellen, I think. So, you know, maybe there's some kind of late season tricks that they can pull out, but it seems like not a huge turnaround in terms of just hardware sales at the end of the year.
Well, I mean, year on year, you're talking about both Smash and Mario Kart, both of which we saw runs on hardware about that time.
Yeah, I think a lot of people who were interested in Smash Brothers went ahead and bought their system over the summer so they could go ahead and start playing Mario Kart. You know, maybe Smash Brothers was the reason that they bought the system, but maybe by the time Smash came out, they already had it. Because Smash did well. We don't know the exact numbers. It was, I think, from what I saw, Smash Wii U. Okay, so this data comes from NeoGAF, so thanks
so
to them.
I'm reading the Nintendo press release right now. So, okay. 710,000.
For Smash on the Wii U.
Yes.
Which is, that's big sales for a Wii U game. And
well,
yet
well, keep in mind, that game,
only...
that's only 9 days of data, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure. But that does, to me, that paired with a 10% increase year over year does not indicate that people are buying Wii U's to play Smash Brothers.
But the difference,
they
might
have bought it. That might be part of the reason,
so
but that's not the big driver.
It's a 10% year over year, but it's a 90% increase in sales of software.
Of software. And that's across the board. So that's not just Smash Brothers. That's a lot of stuff.
Well, yeah,
and I
know.
Think
but
that's also the. That's a.
That's
you know,
the
we
money.
Talked about. Oh yeah, it's money. It's great for Nintendo. But I think the real message there of the software going up 90%, even though hardware sales haven't gone up a ton, is just that the people who already owned Wii U's are more engaged with the system now. And you don't have to go very far to hear stories that prove that out.
I mean,
you know,
this show,
I bought four
Wii U games in the last month.
Yeah, and a year ago, we were playing Mario and not much else. You know, I mean, it was a pretty dry holiday last year, and I think the sales really reflected that. And it seems like people are now – people who had the system one way or the other for whatever reason are now interested in the games Nintendo's releasing. And I think that – I mean, the Wii U lineup this year has been obviously better than last year.
So
and I
Johnny,
think next year it will be even better than that from the looks of it.
To the point of whether or not people were buying Wii U's to play Smash, they do note in their press release that the week of the 23rd – the game came out on the 21st. So the week of the 23rd – was the biggest week of Wii U hardware sales since the launch week.
Interesting.
I think that, I mean, they may have gotten that whole 10% in that week.
Maybe so. Yeah, that's interesting.
I agree, Johnny, that probably people are finally seeing like the amount of software that they want to see. And are now snatching up Wii U's. I've only now am I starting to see people asking me like, so the Wii U, like, do you think it's worth it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I've got you know, aunts and or you know, in-laws asking like, well, like, would this be good for you know, my kids? And that's just not a question that came up before at all.
Right. Yep. Well, that's good. That's a good sign for sure.
Another point, and this is all Wii U here because there's no 3DS Amiibo reader yet. That with the Amiibo launch, they in Nintendo's press release they say it's about 1-to-1 with Smash Brothers sales in the U.S., which means they sold about 710,000 Amiibos.
Yeah, now a lot of those are to the same people, right?
Yes.
There's a lot of people buying a dozen of them.
You crazy bastards!
It's not like every person who bought Smash Brothers bought an Amiibo.
I don't know what I expected out of the Amiibo launch, but probably not that.
That seems good.
Yeah, I mean
that sounds strong to me.
No, the profit margin on that's not so. I mean, the big for them that 90% software number matters more than anything because that's where the big Skrilla is. And I mean that's great, but like Amiibo, I can't imagine they make more than a couple bucks per unit because they have to make the damn thing and then they have to give the cut to the retailers. But okay, $3 a unit. That's that's $21 million or $2.1 million. Congratulations. Have a good day.
Well, and the Amiibos will continue to sell because they'll continue to release those. I mean, those don't have the long development period that a video game does. So once they have an established market for Amiibo, if they think people will keep buying them, they can just keep making them all year round. We could be on series 18 by this time next year of Amiibos.
Hey guys, it's Goron Tunic Link. I mean that would be the full Activision as we would call it.
Mm. But yeah, to me, the Amiibo is neither here nor there. I don't know enough about toy sales to factor that in.
It is and it isn't, because ultimately our concern coming out of the day the music died was not just that the Wii U was in bad shape, because Wii U was in bad shape, but that the whole company had problems.
Yeah, well, they were losing their fans at that point. They were really they were losing us. You know, I mean, we weren't excited about Wii U, and if we can't be excited, then who can? So I think what Nintendo has done this year, although the outcomes are encouraging but not like mind-blowing, right? I mean, the Wii U has not become a runaway success. It seems to be gaining respect. It seems to be on steadier ground. And the lineup seems to be improving, which is what I'm the most excited about. And that's why we were concerned in the first place.
It's like it now has games and people are buying them.
Yeah, I think...
Shock.
I think the takeaway, though, and there was, I'm trying to remember which financial magazine I was reading that had the article that discussed the projection that Nintendo made profit last quarter and surprised everybody. Like, wait, they made money? But talking about how they're going to make more money this year than they lost last year, according to estimates.
Oh, nice.
By about $100 million. So like they're projecting about $300 million profit this year. They lost about $200 last year. Which is a lot of money, but you know, you deal with it. But it is that they chalked it up as I think it was Wall Street Journal. They chalked it up as a validation of what Iwata's been saying, which is, look, we know we have a problem. The problem is we don't have games. Once we have games, the problem will fix itself. Yeah. And that may not be totally true, because the Wii U sales haven't I think that's wrong. They haven't. This would have been a bad week to compare to, because it would have been Black Friday that week. No, it's November, but it would have been, you know, November is a relatively decent sales month, even though it was bad. I think if you compare year on year, because every month before November was bad last year too. That was the takeaway. We thought November might be the month where they kind of turned it around, and they didn't. Mm-hmm. That was what was so depressing about it.
Yeah, I mean, it was better than the month before, but not by much.
Right. Whereas they've been better consistently the last few months. So yeah.
Since May, the Wii U sales have been drastically better than the same month from the year before, which is not a surprise when you look at the games that were out.
Right. I mean, I would think from a certain extent, they're what they were telling us, there will be games, it will get better, ultimately was true. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, he could point to that big fat in the black number and say, see, told you we got this. Part of that's not on them. Part of that's on the deliberate inflation of the Japanese economy. There are other factors in play, but certainly games have made a difference.
Yeah. Well, also games are not the only thing that you can do or should do to make your system sell better. And
sure.
One of my concerns here, and I would guess that the reason that the sales didn't spike more than, you know, 10% better than last November, is that the Wii U comes across as being a little bit pricey for what it is when you compare it to the competition. You know, a year ago, you couldn't even necessarily say that, because the other systems were at launch price. But they've both come down at least a little bit since then, especially with all the sales around this time of year. And you haven't seen really good bundles or really good deals on Wii U.
Right.
And the base price is now about the same as an Xbox One. And not to say that Xbox is a better platform than Wii U. I don't necessarily think it is right now. But I do think a lot of people feel like in the long run, they will get more out of an Xbox, because there'll be so many more games released for it, you know? And you got to figure that Microsoft probably has a longer-term commitment to that platform than Nintendo does to Wii U, because of how the Wii U has been such an anchor on them. So I do tend to still think that until the Wii, you know, to me, the Wii U has not had any kind of like mainstream push yet. I think they're doing a better job of selling it to gamers, you know, people who already know what it is. And that's where a lot of their sales have probably come from this year. But I don't think they've really gone out to the mass market. I don't think they've hit Blue Ocean at all, really. And maybe that will start to become the focus going forward. But
why is Bayo 2 not on Today Show?
there's so many reasons.
How much money would you pay
to watch
Al Roker play Bayo 2? I would pay $100.
At this point, they're not even Blue Ocean. They're just trying to like keep their head above water in the Red Ocean. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, they're trying to make money in the Red Ocean, pretty much.
Yeah, but my point being that Microsoft has shown that they will do what it takes, right? I mean, this year they have been aggressive from before E3, and they haven't let up at all. And it has turned around their system in very short order. I mean, in the past 6 months or so, that console has become way more viable. It's selling much better. And at what cost to that company? I don't know. I'm sure it's dear. But Nintendo just does not seem as interested in revolutionizing its approach that to that extent. And I think you can see that in the sales numbers, and that, you know, Microsoft finally took over, or Xbox finally took over as the best selling console, in November of this year. And Wii U did a little bit better than last year. And Nintendo, I feel like maybe they're just being more subtle about their strategy with it. And they're not just coming out and like making these grand statements the way Microsoft is, but also, at some point, this system is now 2 years old. It hasn't changed in price very much at all since it first came out. They haven't released any kind of refined model, anything with a higher storage capacity or anything like that. So the games are the only thing that Nintendo's using to leverage any improvement in the status of that platform. And, yep. And my point is, there are other knobs they could be turning and they're not. And I think that's limiting how much of a turnaround that we're seeing right now.
I think ultimately they were a bit constrained on where they existed economically up until, you know, maybe last quarter, because they were in the red. They were losing money and they have investors to answer to. It would be hard for them to have justified another price cut and lose more money.
Sure. But all I'm saying is, in the next 12 months, there will be a Wii U price cut.
Well, yeah, but
end of story. But when that happens, we're going to go back and say, should they have maybe done that before last Christmas? Could that have made a much bigger splash at that time?
Yes, absolutely.
I think so.
I don't know.
I mean, they're going to do it anyway, and it's probably going to happen real soon.
But I think, I think right now they just to, you know, ensure that there is stability in their brand, that yeah, we can persevere as a company and continue to be successful. I think that there's a certain psychological performance or importance to the company and its investors at that point. Like that we're saying, no, we can be a successful company. Cause there's real doubt about that. I mean, we talked about this last week. There is a constant just deluge of people who doubt this company can be successful. So being able to say, no, we are a successful company. We always were. We just had a bad run. I think there's monetary value going forward to the stability of the company. That is a company that thrives on being stable.
But I'm just saying a $50 price cut doesn't destabilize Nintendo.
Well, maybe, but what if that $50 all ends up just being wiping out their margin on the system? I mean, that's...
Then they need to fix their manufacturing process. The system's been out for 2 years. That's what I'm saying. But anyway, let's get back to the email and start to wrap up this discussion by asking the questions Alexander posed to us, and I'll ask you guys, is the current picture, is this what it looks like for Nintendo to have saved Wii U?
I think so.
Are these the golden days of the Wii U era?
I would say that they stopped what could have been a disastrous backslide.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I think
to say that, oh, it's only 10% better. Well, you don't usually expect year three to be significantly better than year two.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of flat. I mean, I don't expect it. I mean, I think it sales may increase next year, but I think that's probably going to be the peak. Because, I mean, you look at you look at the games they're releasing next year. Beyond that, you know, it gets kind of like for huge pillar games, not a whole lot more out there unless they want to go into Metroid territory. So
I'm not even sure. I don't even think that we're going to see like a Chibi Robo or an Odama or anything like that year after, you know, like it's just not coming.
Oh no. I think there will be at least some 2017 games. There has to be invariably. 2016, sorry.
You're really pushing out there now.
I'm tired.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. There will be some games in 2016. I guess the bigger question is, will there be a new console in 2016? I don't think it's out of the question right now.
I think if you were to ask them right now, they'd probably say, we hope not. Right. I don't think you want to go through that process so quickly.
Well, they're going to have – I'm sure that they will be focused on a smoother transition to the next console in terms of development resources and portability of code and, you know, having things put in place to deal with different technology. Cause that really, they got caught with their pants down with Wii U. That seems to be a big part of it.
I'm actually somewhat curious how they brand manage like the new 3DS going forward. Cause I mean, besides that thing having a shit awful name, like it will be somewhat informative for understanding what they're going to do with the Wii U successor. And maybe the Wii U successor is, fuck me, the new Wii U. And they do something dumb like that. But maybe we can at least understand, all right, so you have a campaign you have to launch now because you're launching a new system effectively. How do you handle it?
Hmm.
While staying, we're still sustaining this system. Like, this system is still being maintained. They've got a little bit of a tricky gymnastics move they have to do with their marketing going forward with the new 3DS. In Japan, they just fucking owned it. It's a new system. Monster Hunter is better.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is the ideal monster hunting experience. And then Japan's like, fucking give it to us. We'll do that. That's a trickier sell here.
Yeah, and I think it's harder to do with a console also because of the greater investment.
Sure, but
that
I think
people make in a console.
I think you can learn lessons. I think the biggest takeaway on 3DS was it happened so close to the Wii U effectively that they couldn't apply the lessons in time.
Hmm.
Because that system was already under development. The first generation of games was probably already going by the time, you know, the 3DS's earliest lifetime problems were apparent.
Well, I mean, the 3DS was kind of a disaster in the early days, too. I mean, not on the order of Wii U, but it,
they had
to save that system with pretty drastic.
The takeaways they had on the 3DS were probably too late to influence the launch of the Wii U. Because the Wii U was probably already going. I'll be curious, because new 3DS is a soft launch. I mean, we see that. But I'll be curious, you know, if they show their hand a little bit on how to manage a launch better. Because they launched new 3DS in Japan with Smash Brothers. And while that's a game that it supports the other one, it is a better experience, allegedly.
I think the other big piece of it that maybe they're learning is that the conventional wisdom is that a launch sort of makes or breaks a system. Like, you know, gamers might expect poor quality titles at launch most of the time.
Don't worry, that happened in the second year too, apparently.
But people do have an expectation that the launch of a system is kind of a harbinger of what it's going to do later, and that a system has to have a huge launch in order to be good later. And Nintendo, with 3DS, and it's starting to appear with Wii U, they are starting to kind of disprove that conventional wisdom.
Well, they're saying,
you know what, people put a little too much attention on what happens at launch, and maybe we need to also communicate better with people, you know, and let people know what's coming after launch and have a strategy in mind for what we're going to do with the system after launch. Because that seemed to be lacking on the last two times that they went through it. But they're recovering.
Yeah, it's – like I said, I'm glad there wasn't a backslide this year because there was a real risk that the bottom just falls out.
Yeah, I mean it could have been worse than last year. It could have.
I mean, I don't see this – I mean, with this year, it's like – I mean, really – How badly could they screw it up with Smash Brothers coming out?
They could have screwed it up real badly. People could have just not realized Smash was coming out. I mean, that's totally in the.
They could have made a bad Smash Brothers.
Well, yeah. I mean, assuming Smash Brothers is going to be Smash Brothers, I mean, they could make a shitty version of any game. But I mean, like, assuming Smash is Smash and as good as the last Smash Brothers game, given
the limited marketing buy they did for that game, and it is limited. They did do one though, which is a nice change. I think if they hadn't managed the hype, and I think they ultimately were the you know, they ran the media campaign for that game. They ran the media coverage of that game effectively. If they had failed at that, if they hadn't been their own voice, because, I mean, look at their E3 coverage. They were their own voice during that entire thing. I think they very easily could have, you know, not nearly had the awareness of Smash Brothers' imminent arrival that they ended up with.
Yeah.
I think they've – one of the takeaways they have is the importance of making sure their message gets out there through whatever means necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw that at E3 where they basically ran their own damn stage show.
Yeah, they had a tournament.
They've they have become intimately aware that they need to be responsible for making sure their stuff gets covered.
Well, and they have to – I mean, I think also they're probably starting to feel the true responsibility of carrying these two platforms without third-party support. I mean, if you look at the games, this is in November, the second biggest sales month of the year. The top 10 software titles, they've got Smash Brothers at number 3. That's combining Wii U and 3DS sales. So that's across two different platforms. That's interesting that NPD consider those the same game.
Yeah, but I mean, even if they hadn't combined them.
It's weird that they
them,
group it that way because they are distinct games.
If they hadn't, they would have both charted from the looks of it. So
probably, yeah, although probably lower. And then they have they have the two different versions of Pokemon at 5
but
and 7.
But those are separate. Those are different games. Fuck you, NPDs.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, right?
That is kind of weird that they would separate those but not Smash Brothers. But I the other point I want to make is that so that's they have those three spots on the top 10, which is better than they have most months. But the other seven games on the list, none of those are available on a Nintendo platform.
Nope.
So you don't even have, I mean, even stuff like Madden and Call of Duty this year and Assassin's Creed. None of those games came out on Nintendo systems. So what the sales chart also says to me is that third parties don't need to make Nintendo versions of their games. And that's bad for Nintendo.
Yeah.
And it looks bad for them when the only times that Nintendo can ever have one of the top selling games, it's an exclusive to their platform. That is going to – it just kind of points again to the kind of spacious release schedule that we're already sort of falling into the rhythm for. With Wii U, and it's even worse than on their previous platforms. I mean, Nintendo has to plan on releasing titles in February and April and June and August and, you know, not just in November.
It's back and, in that weird mid-generation N64 where they're like, all right, we have a game a month coming out.
And yeah, like, but even then, a lot of those were from third party. But, you know, in terms of, you know, the whole shortened lifespan thing, I think third parties are very instrumental in keeping your platform viable over several years. Without that supporting structure behind the Wii U, it's hard for me to believe that the system is going to be around with new releases for 5 years. I don't think Nintendo is going to be interested in continuing to make games for it that long because nobody else is going to do it. You know, there'd be some indie games, but
here's my counter to that though. I don't know how things like Hyrule Warriors have done in terms of numbers. I don't know that we have any numbers for that game, any real meaningful ones. But there are plenty of studios that they could partner with to make essentially gap filler games. I mean, especially in Japan.
Yeah, because that may be the story of 2015.
Because Konami ain't doing shit, and I mean, these games, there's probably some value in producing them. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done it. Like monetary value for them as a company.
Yeah, I mean, these are like mid-tier games. You know, the kind of thing that doesn't even really get made in the West anymore. But maybe in Japan, there's still a system to support that level of game development.
And in fact, we had a listener, you know, hit to us on Twitter discussing the death of the mid-tier game and how it parallels the death of the mid-tier movie.
Maybe right. I'm off the mark here, but I'm getting the sense that Star Fox is going to be one of those kind of mid-tier games.
Oh yeah, I mean the fact that they were looking for somebody to make it for them tells me that
it probably won't be that long. It probably won't be the prettiest game, but it'll be fun. It'll be fun. We'll like it. I hope. God, I hope.
Here's the thing: as a mid-tier game, that's kind of. I mean, people are going to get mad. That's kind of where Star Fox belongs.
Yeah, I mean, agree.
That's where it's always been, except for fucking Star Fox Adventures.
But anyway, we should wrap this up, guys. Any final thoughts on the outlook or the difference between this year and last year? Anything like that before we cut it off?
So here's I'm looking at totally unreliable numbers right now. But so they announced Hyrule Warriors this year. I didn't think that. I thought, what the fuck's happening? That game sold about 500,000 units for them since it came out. So it's kind of I think that's what the fate of the system is. I think it's going to be a handful of big games and then they rope in a partner to help work with them on a game, maybe using a franchise, or maybe they just have them make a game and they like Bayonetta 2 and they just pay for it. And I think we're going to get a handful of those and a handful of big games. That's pretty much what the system is going to be going forward. But that's way more optimistic than I was about it last year. I thought by last year we'd be looking at going, man, fuck me. This is a disaster. Like if they can get say 10 games that are worth playing next year. And that's, that seems like a relatively unambitious target, but worth playing isn't a very high aim. That's probably not bad performance for them, considering they're going to have to publish those games.
Looks like it.
I don't really feel any different about the Wii U, like playing the Wii U as I did playing the GameCube, as someone who's way into Nintendo games. Like back then I was like, what do you mean you don't have games? Like I can't keep up, until the very last year. And I kind of feel like we're going to see a reprise of that right now.
Oh, I fucking stayed caught up on the GameCube.
The last year, like I was waiting for Chibi Robo, you know, like I really felt it. And that's when I bought a PlayStation 2. Maybe I'm going to be buying another console in 2015. We'll see. But right now I've got all the gaming that I can do like in a week. So I'm pretty optimistic about that, but I don't really see outside of my bubble, you know, like I don't see how like the really displaced people who have already probably moved on. And I don't really see, you know, people going to the Wii U. So I guess what I'm saying is that I don't understand people.
Believable.
Yeah. I mean, I pretty much agree with Guillaume. I mean, I think that if you're a Nintendo fan that likes Nintendo games, I think the Wii U is going to be great for you over the next year, probably over the next 2 years. If you want anything outside of that, third party games, then you've probably abandoned Wii U already. But I think this is going to be pretty much it. I mean, you'll see a couple of other huge releases, and like, I think it'll be, you know, it'll be mainly like a couple of, like a big release here and there with a bunch of kind of filler games. I would say Wii U probably realistically has maybe next year, year after, and then they'll start to phase it out for something else.
Okay. Yeah. So that'd be about 5 years.
Yeah.
Four. But to me, the interesting thing is I agree with you, with what you said, John, in terms of, I think as an owner of the Wii U, I think we know what to expect. We've lowered our expectations so that, mm-hmm. you know, we won't be disappointed. And we have a pretty clear head going into, you know, I mean, and also all of us own other systems. So that's a bit of a reality of being a Nintendo fan for a lot of people. Certainly for us it is. But I wonder if, you know, me buying 3 or 4 high price, you know, full price Nintendo games a year, and people like me doing that, is that sustainable for Nintendo as a developer, you know, as a platform holder? I mean, even if they can expect consistent sales of maybe, you know, 500,000 units for any average game that they put out there, is that enough to make it worthwhile? You know, I mean, that is so much less than they're used to.
Keep in mind,
so much less.
People like you who buy them digitally, they fucking make bank.
Yeah. I mean, that is certainly part of it, is they can make more money off of fewer sales. And they, you know, even with the digital deluxe ending, that's why I wonder, like, going forward, do they find a way to refocus on stuff like that? Do they release a version of the system with more storage capacity and kind of, you know, really play up that the idea that you can just download games to it? Because it seems to be popular on the other systems, you know, and it's been good for me. So I don't know. There's a lot remaining to be seen. I think December will be interesting as well. But so far, it seems like it kind of mixed results on Nintendo's turnaround here. But there is plenty of cause to look forward to what's coming, and to think that they are figuring some things out. They have made some real adjustments, and I think we are seeing some of the fruits there, although it may not be as dramatic as we would have liked or as they would have liked. So yeah. 2015, I think, will be the real turning point one way or the other. I think that'll be the crossroads where you can really see how will Wii U be remembered. And a lot of it will come down to, are those games good?
Yeah, I really want to see what happens after they've exhausted all of the obvious big games in their catalog.
Well, I would guess EAD Tokyo's got another Mario game in them for the system.
Yeah, sure. I could see that for 2016. I could see that. Yeah, absolutely.
Like a big high production game, because 3D World was not that game. I mean, 3D World is a very attractive game, but it was not Galaxy.
Yep, you're absolutely right.
you know, maybe you get a Metroid game out.
Mm-hmm. I would love it, but at this point, I'm not holding my breath. I mean, that's the one thing. Well, you know, of course they're going to make one of those. I wish I could say that.
John, if you look at the audience that they have to work with here, Metroid makes too much sense to not do.
I agree.
I mean, average gamer doesn't give a shit about Metroid, but the average Wii U owner probably does.
That's the thing, though. I think it's actually the opposite. I think that people outside of the Nintendo, you know, kind of hardcore fan base, I think they actually like Metroid. Like, I think it has some appeal to, like, people that, you know, are maybe, like, maybe not, like, you know, Mario files. Mm-hmm. You know, that would kind of draw them in. I mean, I remember when Metroid 3 came out, you saw a lot of that where, like, people were like, I don't give a shit about Wii, but, you know, Metroid 3, it looks pretty cool. I might just have to, you know, check that out.
Yeah, but then they didn't.
Well, I mean.
But they didn't buy it.
At least, I mean, there was interest, though.
I think.
There was buzz, I should say.
Yeah, there was some. I think the takeaway they also can start doing, and I think this is kind of a weird place for them to be in. They've leveraged the last couple Smash Brothers games as promotional tools for franchises that they haven't touched in a while.
And Duck Hunt will save the Wii U.
Well, no, but I would. My takeaway from playing that game, and I probably badgered John to death about it, was like, what if they just used these two characters in their own game as opposed to fucking Duck Hunt? Because they're way too, like, they were way too well animated to be a fucking thing that you shoot at. But like
a Duck Hunt platformer.
Yeah, because like
I'd those be down two, for that.
Because those two characters are the best characters in Smash Brothers for their pure stupidity.
Yeah.
So that is going to wrap up our catch up for Wii U sales. I hope people found it interesting. We don't talk about this kind of stuff in quite this level of depth very often. So feel free to send your feedback, but I'm sure we will focus more on games next week. So if you have any games you'd like us to talk about or any questions about what's going on in games, please send those in to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We would really appreciate that. And as always, keep an eye on the website. We've got lots of reviews and other big end-of-year type features going up right now at nintendoworldreport.com. So thank you for listening. Thank you, all my friends here on the panel, for doing this every week. I hope everyone enjoyed it, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye.
Later.
Bye.